Canadian woman's interest in the Russian. What a completely fucked up day, thought Court, as he stood there, exchanging threatening looks with Gennady. This better not get any worse. The older NSS man, the one with the goofy glasses, spent a couple of minutes looking through Walsh's belongings. Court thought it was just for show, but when he pulled out the black notebook Gentry had seen her thumbing through earlier on the tarmac, he began to worry. He hoped there wasn't anything in there that would invite more trouble for the woman. The man leafed through the pages and stopped on a hand-drawn sketch and description of the Aleutian aircraft. He looked up at the girl.
"Why are you asking questions about this cargo flight? What is your interest in this aircraft?"
"I like airplanes. Is that a crime in your country?"
The man stared at her a long time. In a nation where few women are even allowed to work outside the home, a back-talking white lady was a double anomaly, and he was clearly not sure how to handle her. Ellen found herself no longer afraid. She'd accomplished much in the past hour, and though she did not have picture proof that the Russians were violating sanctions, the actions of the NSS right now gave her all the proof she needed to be certain she was on the right track. She'd done well to get this far, and she knew it. Undercover as a UN employee, she'd thoroughly charmed the pilot into taking her on board, had made it to within 25 yards of the rear ramp of the aircraft when the jeep of soldiers came and picked them up. The Russian insisted on going along with her. He wanted to pretend to be her knight in shining armor, although it was obvious he just wanted to use this as a way to get into her pants. When they arrived back at the terminal, she saw the two NSS officers who'd interrogated her days before standing with the suspicious, dark-complected Russian crew member named Victor. Clearly, he'd reported her to these guys to keep her away from the flight. Bastard. She knew what he was trying to hide, and he was not going to get away with it. Gennady broke in.
"Look, she ships goods for the United Nations. The United Nations has IL-76s in their fleet. She has to know how big they are and how fast they travel and how much they can carry. She has done nothing wrong by asking for a tour of my aircraft."
He reached across the table and took the sheet of paper from the open notebook, held it up to illustrate his point. The secret policeman regarded the Russian pilot's comments for a moment, then said,
"Perhaps you are correct."
He looked back to Walsh.
"Who did you say you worked for in Khartoum?"
Ellen sighed, rolled her eyes, rubbed her left upper arm with her right hand.
"I've told you a dozen times, and just like my ID says, I work for UNAMID in the Transportation and Logistics Division. I came here to interview camp workers about their needs and—"
"What is the name of your director?"
the secret policeman asked. He picked up a booklet that he'd brought into the interview room with him.
"Charles Stevens,"
Walsh smiled briefly.
"A fellow Canadian."
The man looked into the book for several seconds, nodded sourly, and then put it down. Court had just begun to relax again when he glanced over at Gennady on the other side of the woman under interrogation. The pilot had noticed something on the page with the drawing and info about the IL-76, and he peered at it intently. Confusion grew on his face now, and to Court, that could only mean trouble. Gennady spoke softly.
"Ellen, the aircraft represented here is an MF variant."
She shrugged her shoulders, too quickly and nonchalantly for Court's taste. It seemed an artificial reaction.
"It is?"
"Yes. The UN does not fly the IL-76 MF.
The Russian was looking up at her now, but her eyes remained to the front, towards the NSS officers.
"They don't?"
"No. They don't."
Shit, thought Court. Gennady was suspicious now. Hell, Court was suspicious now himself. Why would a UN do-gooder have a hand-drawn diagram of the Russian plane? He really hoped she could talk her way out of this predicament because there wasn't a damn thing he could do to help her.
"Who are you, and who do you work for?"
Gennady asked, louder now, reaching out and turning the woman around by the shoulders to face him. Chapter 18. The Russian pilot spun her around. He'd figured her out, and she knew she could not play dumb with him like she could with the NSS. It was time for a counterpunch. When she was a kid, her father had a saying, and she had turned it into her mantra. Go big or go home. All her life, she'd pushed herself to the limits of her abilities, did not accept second best or half measures. And now, clearly she'd found evidence of illegal weapons transfers between Russia and Sudan. Exactly what she knew had been going on, and exactly what she wanted to prevent by moving to Holland and joining the International Criminal Court. This was not a time to be demure, to be compliant, to run and hide. She would use the weight of her position, the power of her organization, the strength of the international community to get herself away from here, away from these thugs, and back to her office so she could reveal what she'd discovered. Back in Khartoum, she had stared down Sudanese government officials a half dozen rungs higher up the ladder than these two little black-suited buffoons, and she was not going to let these men intimidate her. And the Russian pilot was an arrogant bastard who needed to see that women were not placed in front of him just to bow to his will. Go big or go home? Ellen wasn't going home until this dark secret, the secret that many had suspected, had been revealed to the world. She was about to go big. Say something, lady, Court said to himself. She just stood there, staring at the tall Russian. Court needed to get this over with, to get this woman tossed into the little cell here at the airport until he and his waste of time flight could get wheels up and out of here. Say something, anything, Court silently implored the woman, but when she did break the silence, he immediately regretted her opening her mouth.
Very well, gentlemen. My name is Ellen Walsh. I am not an employee of UNAMID. I am, in fact, an inspector with the International Criminal Court here in the Sudan to investigate sanctions violations concerning weapons sales from abroad.
Oh, shit, woman, you just got yourself killed, Court thought, near disbelief at what he was hearing. How could she be so stupid? The NSS men's eyes grew impossibly wide, and Gennady looked away from Walsh and towards Gentry, an expression on his face like he'd just been poleaxed. Walsh continued.
We've known about this flight for a long time. I was sent here to see it for myself. I can assure you my entire agency, both in Khartoum and in the Netherlands, is well aware that I am here. If I am not immediately allowed to communicate with my staff, there will be...
Gennady shouted at her. You lie! We were not supposed to come to Al-Fashir. We were only diverted at the last moment. No one sent you here to spy on us!
The secret policemen recovered from their surprise and stormed around the table, heading straight for Ellen Walsh.
ICC!
Gennady began shouting outside the room to the rest of the flight crew, who were standing out in the terminal. Court couldn't stop him from doing so. The two NSS men immediately confronted her, spun her around, and put her arms behind her back. These guys did not possess more than two speeds, off and on, and she had just flipped their switch. No doubt they were concerned about their own careers, their own lives even, allowing this woman to wander the airport while the Rossiborone export flight was parked on the tarmac.
You fucking Canadian whore!
Shouted Gennady, turning back to the woman. The big Russian slapped her face with his powerful hand. Court started to move forward with the objective of breaking Gennady's jaw and pushing the NSS officers back, but he stayed himself. He was in two forms of cover at the same time, and neither of these alter egos would have any incentive to stop the secret police from detaining this woman. He could not show the Sudanese that he was anything more than a Russian cargo aircraft crewman, and he could not show the Russians that he was anything more than some dispassionate agent they were bringing into the country. So he just stood there, watching, as the NSS men handcuffed her, and she kicked out at Gennady as he stood in front of her, shouting in Russian. Soon, four armed GOS soldiers stormed in, alerted no doubt by the shouting and wrestling in the interrogation room. Gentry's Russian cohort scooted back out the door, and a couple of other Russians peered in, with gawking stares of fascination and even amusement. The older secret policeman grabbed her by her chin and turned her face towards his.
There is a place we take unwanted guests. I promise you that within minutes of arriving at the Ghost House, you will regret your espionage against the Republic of Sudan.
Espionage? I am not a spy. I have every right as a member of the international community to—
Don't say another word, lady, Court shouted aloud, no attempt now to hide his American accent and stay in cover. This fool was making her own situation direr by the second. Just shut up and do what you're told. You don't know anything. Get out of here and do what you have to do, but don't let on that you know any—
You speak English?
She looked at Gentry, confusion replacing her fury. Court tried to reason with the woman in short bursts so the others would not understand. He switched to French. He hoped like hell that, as a Canadian, she understood it, and hoped also like hell that the Sudanese did not. You are not ICC. Do not say you are ICC or they will kill you. Tell them you are lying. Tell them you are nobody. UN, that's all. One of the NSS men looked up at him in surprise, but was too busy trying to pull the strong woman over to a chair to stop what he was doing. Ellen began crying, screaming at the same time.
I don't speak French, asshole! Do you speak English or not? Help me!
After she was led to the chair, her small hands still cuffed behind her back, some of the soldiers cleared out, and one of the NSS men left the room to use the phone. The Russians had all returned to the concourse, sensing that the show was over. Court remained in the room with the girl, pacing back and forth. He stepped in front of her and leaned close. Her lip bled where Gennady had slapped her, and her rust-colored blouse was torn at the shoulder from the soldier's rough treatment. He spoke to her softly, quickly, so the NSS would not pick up all of it. Listen carefully. Don't fight with them, but be firm. Demand to speak to someone from UNAMID. Don't say anything else. You are not in the ICC. You saw nothing. You know nothing. Gentry looked down at the floor, not up at her eyes. You'll be okay. He turned away and headed back out the door slowly. You'll be fine.
Who are you?
She called out to him. He slowed but did not turn back and look at her. Nobody. Gentry and the rest of the Aleutian's crew walked together across the darkened tarmac towards the huge aircraft. Court was mad and worried, and he felt like shit about the Canadian woman. His shoulders sagged as he walked in the rear of the group, his head slumped down. He tried to tell himself that her outburst condemned her, that it was her fault, not his, and he could not do anything about it. He'd told her she'd be fine, but from pretty much everything he could see and guess about the situation, he was certain she would be killed. It would be just too easy to make her disappear right here and now, and too damaging to let her walk away to reveal what she knew. Court also knew that if he could come to this conclusion, it made absolutely no sense for the NSS or the GOS to come to any other conclusion. Miss Ellen Walsh was dead. Your fault, Gentry. He said it aloud, softly, as he walked through the night with the flight crew. They were still a couple of hundred yards from the aircraft. Court began to slow. He looked up and saw the others were ahead of him by several yards now. He slowed some more. Then his slumped shoulders raised and stiffened. He looked up from his sulk and said, Gennady, don't leave me. The pilot turned, continued walking backwards.
What? Leave you where?
Just wait for me. I have to—
We are going now, 15 minutes for pre-flight, and then we are in the air.
I don't know what you are talking about, but I am not waiting for you. Come on. Court stood firm in the dark. Insects chirped and buzzed and trilled and clicked in the scrub around him. He looked back over his shoulder towards the dark terminal. A black four-door sedan pulled up to the employee access door.
Damn it,
he shouted into the night.
Let's go,
barked Gennady, angrier this time. Court looked ahead at the aircraft, still 200 yards ahead. He thought about his 50 pounds of gear. He wished he had some of it with him now. Gennady asked,
What is the matter with—
Court interrupted him. He pointed a threatening finger in his face.
Don't leave me. I'll be right back. Do not take off until I get back.
He knew if he invoked the name of Gregor Sidorenko, this pilot would do exactly as he said, but he was not about to violate operational security to that level just yet. Instead, he just threw out a, Please! He did not wait for a response. Instead, he turned on his heel and began running back to the terminal.
Damn it!
Chapter 19. The gray man had sprinted 100 yards through the warm night with no real plan other than to find the woman and to figure out some way he might help her. He wasn't going to pick a fight with an airport full of secret police and soldiers, so he didn't have any real idea where he was going with this impetuous charge, but he'd been around long enough to put some confidence in his powers of improvisation. Ahead, he saw the bright shaft of artificial light from the opening of the terminal's employee access door. The two NSS men appeared in the beam, and behind them, two armed GOS Army sergeants pushed Ellen Walsh forward into the back of the four-door sedan. The soldiers climbed in on either side of her, and the NSS men got in the front. The vehicle pulled away in the opposite direction of Gentry's Run, just as he arrived at the terminal's side entrance. He knew they were heading to the exit of the airport, taking the woman away. And he knew where they were going. The NSS detention facility in Al-Fasher, the ghost house. "Damn it!" he shouted again as he stopped running. Two airport guards eyed him from the doorway, vaguely curious perhaps, but they did not come outside. Gentry looked around for a vehicle, but found nothing. Instead, he turned around and began walking back towards the aircraft. As soon as he left the dim lights coming from the terminal and disappeared from the guard's sight, he began running again. This time, he turned around the side of the building and shot between several shipping containers that had been lined up to serve as mobile offices for some NGO that had apparently long since pulled up stakes. Passing these, his feet left the warm tarmac and sank into thatch-covered sand and hard dirt. A small hill rose towards the end of the airport property, another 50 yards away. There was a metal fence here. Court had noticed that it ran alongside a reasonably well-trafficked road, back when there was still enough light to see this far into the distance. Now, he did not see any headlights, but neither did he see any guards out here in the desolate darkness. He ran past the wreckage of a hulking, high-winged twin-prop aircraft that had obviously crashed and then been towed here to await the eventual burial in the sand that would occur over years of swirling winds. Court skidded to a halt at the base of the fence. It stood 10 feet high and was topped with thick coils of razor wire. He untied his boots but left them on his feet, then climbed the fence quickly and adroitly. At the top, he held on with one hand just below the razor wire, pulled off one boot and then the other. He struggled to put his hands into the boots, again, one at a time. The skin between his toes burned as they pinched in the chain links, supporting all the weight of his body that he could not hold up with one hand. He pushed into the razor wire with his boot-covered hands, doing his best to cover as wide an area as possible. He pressed the dangerous barbs tight against the top of the metal fence with the thick rubber soles. Then, while keeping the boots stationary, his feet continued up the fence until they were near the top, positioning his body like a swimmer on the block, waiting for the starting gun. From here, he shifted all his body weight to his arms, kicked his legs up until he was in a sloppy handstand position on the top of the fence, and then let his legs continue forward. He completed the flip and went airborne, his boots flung off his hands as he left the razor wire, and he landed in a rolling heap in the dirt on the outside of the airport grounds. He was not hurt, maybe a small bruise or two on his arm and back, and he found his first boot immediately in the dark. It took a few seconds for him to realize that the other was still stuck in the razor wire, and he had to climb back up and tear it free. Another 30 seconds to retie his laces, and he headed down the small hillock towards the road. Court had not studied a map of Al-Fasher, wasn't certain he'd ever heard of the place before that afternoon. But he had sat in the cockpit and paid attention to the terrain and the surrounding area as the IL-76 flew its base leg alongside the airport. From this, he knew that the road the NSS vehicle was taking headed off to the north for a mile or so before meeting up with the highway that ran east and west. At this intersection, they would make a right turn, and it would take them several more minutes to get to Al-Fasher town. Court knew that if he could commandeer some sort of vehicle, he could get in front of them and intercept them before getting to the ghost house. A light ahead of him on the road at first filled him with optimism. Within seconds, he saw the single headlight of what he assumed to be a motorcycle approaching. This was ideal. Court would like nothing better than getting on a bike. he could skirt through traffic at his own speed and find Ellen Walsh and her captors. He ducked back into the dark to await its arrival. Of course, he had no clue where to find the ghost house, but he knew that virtually everyone in this town would know the location of the secret police's clandestine prison. He doubted anyone would walk with him up to the front door and knock, but he did not expect too much trouble getting directions from a local on a street corner if Court whipped out a small wad of Sudanese pounds. Court hurried to the side of the road now. His plan was borderline brutal, certainly cruel, but he did not doubt its effectiveness. He would wait for the driver of the motorcycle to get within a few yards of him, and then he would step into the road and knock the man and his vehicle over. He prepared himself for this action, but he noticed the bike was moving slower than it should have been with so much open road. He then presumed it to be only a motor scooter, which would still be an effective vehicle to make his way through narrow streets and thick third-world traffic, even if